As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic's Football GM Podcast. And now, The Athletic's Mike Sando and former NFL Executive of the Year, Randy Mueller.
Welcome, everybody, to the Football GM Podcast. Mike Sando, senior writer from The Athletic, here with the two-time GM, former Exec of the Year, Randy Mueller. How you doing, Randy?
Doing great, Mike. How about yourself?
You know, really good. I do enjoy the draft run-up. It's almost more fun when it's over and you can stack it and see what everybody did and the dust settles. But there's hopefully some clarity we can find today. I know everyone's got opinions flying all over the internet and everyone's a film reviewer now. And sometimes it's just hard to know what to read, what to pay attention to. That's why we're so fortunate to have Randy here, 35 years in this business, evaluator, executive, two-time general manager. When he talks about a prospect, he's seen him. He's done this 1,000 times before. And so we're really privileged to have you here, Randy, and there's a lot to get to.
Yeah, thank you very much. Just one quick note before you get into your schedule. Yeah. I would only say this regarding all the information you say that's flying around out there. When I was in the GM chair, I would find a way to shut it all out just for this reason, just because there's too many dots to connect. It's like drinking through a fire hose, right? It's just too much information. And I wanted to control my little pea brain, what was going in my mind. So I would shut it all out. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, my little pea brain is going to be perfect for that today. What do we got going on? We got Justin Fields having a pro day. Trey Lance is going to. They're supposedly tailoring that to the 49ers, who we know want a quarterback, but which one? We're going to get into that. We're going to go... Really, what we're going to do today is we're going to use the top 10 picks of the draft. I did a column today on The Athletic, by the way. You can find that. The headline is, a GM projects the 2021 NFL draft's first 10 picks, including which quarterback the 49ers select. Randy and I are going to use that kind of device. We're going to go through the top 10 ourselves, but we're going to use it as a vehicle to discuss a lot of other stuff, including some of the players that Randy finds interesting, positions he finds interesting. He's actually, believe it or not, there's defensive players in this draft. You'd never know it looking through the top 10 prospects, but or top 10 picks. But we're going to get into some of those guys. Randy has opinions on them, thoughts on them. We're going to get into some of the names in the news this week. We got Jadeveon Clowney in the news, James Conner signed with Arizona. Hopefully there's time. We want to get to a great piece of my colleague at The Athletic, Jordan Rodrigue, had on the Rams, kind of streamlining their draft process. Randy's got thoughts on that. I do too. Randy, let's not use any more time setting this thing up. Let's just hit the ground running. Before we get to the top 10, I think this is kind of interesting. I mean, let's just take a deep breath. There's 2 weeks to the draft. Where would you be at if you were a general manager of the team? Where are teams at in this process? Because there hasn't been a football game played now in a long time.
Not in a long time. I agree with you. I think everybody's process probably takes them a little different time to get through, a little different window to get through. But for the most part, most teams right now have, Let me just go back. There's been a couple jumping off points. There's January and February when your scouts and your personnel people all report on all of their information. So that's out there. And so your board starts to get set. And just pretend there's like a worksheet out there. And so the worksheet now has an order. The scouts have had their piece. Coaches have yet to even have any input in that. That doesn't happen until really the last couple of weeks my experience shows. And we would get the coaches involved the last couple of weeks. They would give all the reports of the players they've seen, and they haven't seen everybody. So they've seen a small workload of names that you've given them. They don't have time to go through every guy either, and they're not evaluators by trade. So we would send the coaches on their spring workouts tour. Not much of that's happened this year because of COVID, but that process kind of has ended now. So we have our draft board set by position, right? We have our rankings within our positions. But for my money, now the biggest thing and most important thing is to almost disregard those position rankings now, but use them as a gauge to set your board of 1 through 150, regardless of position. And this is the board you're going to draft on. In some teams, this is transparent. I always like to involve our scouts, involve as many people as we could in setting the priority of 1 through 150, let's say. Some teams have 300 players on their board. I never was one for 300. I just think it's too many. There was never a year that came where we didn't get all of our draft picks out of our top 150. So I wanted to focus. My theory was let's focus on lining these 1 through 150 up. If we can just line up the guys we like, we're going to get the players that we want. And that's sometimes what leads me to the process itself, leads you to the players. So we would set up our 1 through 150 now for the next week or maybe less. And then I wanted to have everything set a week or 10 days ahead of time. So then we could strategize. We could put our mock drafts to work. We could spend a little time getting intel, because really you've been locked down as a GM or a personnel guy or as a head coach the last few weeks. So now you want to come out of your hole, gather more information, gather as much as you can. The draft order is set. You've heard all the rumors and everybody's, figuring out what they want to do. But I would use that last week as more of a strategy session than anything else. And then I would put our coaches at work with our scouts in combination, in that maybe I give them five guys that are graded very similar on our board, and let's put them in preference as to how you would like them in your schemes. So not moving cards around by any sense, but just different clusters of players, and have those coaches give you their input with our scouts all together. And let's put those in a priority. And then our board may tweak a little bit just to reflect that. So these are some of the exercises that teams are going through around the league right now. And again, I don't think they've gotten to the point where they're really philosophizing yet and figuring it out. But I do think down deep, a decision maker, and in most cases, your top brass know who you're going to pick. You just don't know how it's all going to map out yet. And so I know I never slept good until that few days before the draft when I had it all mapped out.
Yeah. So obviously the teams at the very top, they can just have a short list of players. They know they're getting one of them.
Yeah, it's easy. Right.
If you're let's just say you're picking eighth, you know, you're Scott Fitterer, you're the new GM of the Panthers,
right?
And you have two positions you really want, you know, that you want to get. How good do you feel at this point about, you know, how many names do you have where you know you're going to get that guy?
Yeah, and that depends on the draft. You know, it depends on the depth of the draft and how many class one guys you think are up there. You may have, you know, 20 or 25 first round picks above the line as being first round talents, but how many really fit with what you want? And I always say the most ideal draft pick is not only finding the best player, but in hope that it's finding the best player at a position of need for you. So you do have to have that in the back of your mind as well, and keep common sense as a factor. What you got to remember is, and I think most people know by now, you're trying to build a team. You're not trying to collect talent. And there's a big difference. There's some teams, I swear, every year that they're just collecting talent, right? They're collecting nice bass lures. But I want to have my box filled up, so I want to build a team. And there's a big difference, in my opinion.
So I'm interested in that, because we always hear over the years, hey, we're just taking best player available, man. I mean, you know, hey, we want to fill our needs in free agency if we have a couple of them. I want to go in the draft day, take the best player available. What are you saying by we're building a team then?
You've got to have a process that's disciplined that leads you exactly to the best player. I agree. I'm a best player available guy, always have been. But I think a common sense factor has to be inserted in there, in that you know, we have two safeties. We're and our third guy on our board is a safety. Well, we're not going to pick that guy. That just doesn't make sense. So although I don't want to fill out a depth chart by drafting and plugging people in, because I think that you draft players over more valuable players on your board. I've seen that happen way too often, where a card comes out of the fourth round when we've bypassed half the third round and a few in the second round to fill a need. That's a little bit of a struggle for me. Not a little bit. That's a big struggle for me. So you've got to have a big picture in mind in building your team. And really, when I say building your team, you're talking about with first round picks, I'm drafting big guys and I'm drafting fast guys. And so you can't go wrong building your team from the inside out. In other words, maybe it's a tackle, maybe it's a defensive tackle, maybe it's a defensive end. You know, that's the kind of theory. Or I'm drafting a fast guy on the perimeter, and that usually means a receiver or a corner. And again, those are my opinions. Somebody else may have a total different opinion, but that's how I'm starting to build my team. I'm building it with big guys and fast guys, and those sound like general statements, but it's not necessarily true.
It's not a bad guide, right? I mean, it's not a bad default thing to come back to. Right. It sounds really simple, but you can get so down rabbit holes and you know what I mean, where you lose sight of just the basic things. Are we getting bigger and faster? Is our team bigger and faster today off of this?
Well, it's always been a big man's game, and those big guys are valuable. And all you got to do is look at everybody's salary cap to figure out who's getting paid. It's the big guys and the fast guys. So we need to, this is the best chance we have all year to get those guys. It's the best chance that we ever will have to draft a tackle who people are paying $20 million a year to now. We can find guards or maybe even a center, but we can't find tackles worth a darn unless we draft them up here high. Same with a fast receiver. That's why you see fast guys getting picked, or a fast corner. Those are the guys. Sometimes a pass rusher, but we'll get into that later in the pod, but a pass rusher set aside as an edge rusher on his own regard, those guys don't do a lot for me in this day and age, and never have, because they've got to play a position. So we'll cover that a little later in the podcast.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Let's dive into our top 10, which we're just going to use as a loose guide to talk about a bunch of fun stuff. And in some cases, we may be focusing on specifically what a team's going to do. In other cases, it may be a little bit of a branching off point. So our first pick is the Jacksonville Jaguars, and Trevor Lawrence has been penciled in for weeks, maybe even months. Urban Meyer probably wouldn't take the job if he wasn't available. Is there anything about them that's interesting to you? Would you have any doubt would you be worried that one of these other quarterbacks can be better than Trevor Lawrence?
No, not at this point. I just think, and for me, I've said all along, and you know, I like Trevor Lawrence, I like Zach Wilson, but the Trevor Lawrence frame, the size, he has all of the physical skills and checks all the boxes. And for that reason, I think there's giant upside with him as well. Just because I think he's going to be, I mean, there's no way to predict health, but he reduces the chance of getting hurt because he's such a big guy. Now, he's going to have to learn how to take care of his body a little better when he's running these RPOs and all that. But really, I don't have any doubt in my mind that'll be the first pick, and he'd be the first guy on my board for sure. I think the only question I would have about him, and I think that's been answered already, is don't forget that part of the process is the process. And I think in this case, a lot of these players are pulled, poked, grabbed, had everything done to them over the last month. That's the one thing that does factor in a little bit for me, is how they've handled it. How have they handled it, all the pressure? How have they handled being the guy? And it shouldn't surprise you that quarterbacks handle it better than others, because they've been the guy, right? They've been the face of their college, their university. So that's one thing that I think probably just cemented itself with Trevor Lawrence, is that he's used to being the guy. I don't think the process is going to be too much for him. Sometimes the process of all of this does make a guy wilt. And I don't think that's happened in this case, but that's just something to be aware of, I think, as an evaluator and as a decision maker, as you kind of trickle down in that first round as well.
You know, it's what I think about big picture. What's so fascinating to me about Trevor Lawrence going to Jacksonville is the makeup of that division. This was Andrew Luck's division, and it was going to be Luck's division for 15, maybe 20 years. I mean, this was a generational talent who had the physical frame you're talking about. He was going to play forever, and he was going to dominate that division. And we kind of saw his demise, but you know what? Deshaun Watson was going to take that torch. And he was going to be the next really good quarterback in that division for a long time. He still may be. But even Ryan Tannehill, Tennessee, even sort of, whether they hit lightning in a bottle or whatever it was, they sort of hit on a guy. But, you know, this dust may settle here. in the next couple of years, Jacksonville could have the best quarterback in that division. I mean, I'd have to go back to the history of their divisions, but I mean, you might have to go back to like Mark Brunell or something since the last time they were the best team in their division at quarterback. That changes everything for all those teams, him coming to this division. I think that doesn't necessarily get talked about enough. Now, maybe they're going to still be a poorly run operation or like they've been or all that, but this could be the start of a real shift, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think it's another lesson in it's all about timing, right? I agree with you. There's no way Urban Meyer probably takes this job if he doesn't know that he has his quarterback of the future. Because let's face it, some guys are better at picking quarterbacks than others. And in this case, he doesn't have really. I can't give him credit for picking Trevor Lawrence. I mean, when Urban Meyer was the coach at Ohio State, don't forget they picked Dwayne Haskins over Joe Burrow, and Joe Burrow left, you know, so there's some flies there in the past, but he doesn't have to worry about any of that now. This one's been dropped in his lap. Now it's about what he can do with it. But yes, the timing has a chance to ascend Jacksonville to the top of that division without a doubt, just with all the other stuff going around in the division alone. Now, the Colts, I think, are still the team to beat, but
me too.
Jacksonville has a chance, you know, they should be ascending right now. Hey, and that's why the league is set up like it is. They've lost a lot of games for several years to get here. Now, finally, it's going to pay off for him, in my opinion.
Yep, absolutely. So we go to the Jets at the second pick, and you know, if you've been listening to our podcast early in the season, kind of before a lot of people were talking about Zach Wilson, Randy popped in the tape and said, watch out for Zach Wilson. He's going to be drafted real high in this draft, maybe the next quarterback after Trevor Lawrence. Are there any warts on him that concern you? The worst thing I could find is people think he's, you know, comes off a little arrogant. And I know I wrote in my column today that Merrill Hodge, whose son roomed with him for a couple of weeks, was telling ESPN that, nah, he's just a competitive kid. But I've heard that a few times, like rub some people the wrong way. What do you read into that type of stuff about a prospect? And do you have any reservations about Zach Wilson?
Let me just ask you this. Do you think Aaron Rodgers rubs people the wrong way a little bit occasionally? I'm not going to kill this kid for that. You know,
yeah.
I think his character is fine. I think his association with his teammates is fine. I don't see that being an issue at all. I have one minor concern with how big he is and how durable he's going to be in a big man's game, because he's not a big kid, right? But, yeah. You know, he's bigger than Russell Wilson. He's bigger than Kyler Murray. He's bigger than Baker Mayfield. He's bigger than all those guys. So I think he'll be just fine. I think he measured somewhere between 6'2 and 6'3 and 205 pounds or whatever. So eventually I think this kid will be a 220-pound man and be able to hold up to the rigors of playing in the NFL. And when I say playing in the NFL, it's just holding up in the pocket.
You know, we talked about, you kind of still like Sam Darnold a little bit. Is Wilson good enough for you that you would have done what the Jets have done? And in the context of that too, I think is important, that maybe you just want a fresh start, you know, too. Yeah. Maybe there's value in that for everybody, and just not having Darnold have to answer questions about Adam Gase or the past or the, can we, same old Jets, all that type of stuff. But, you know, it wasn't like they got a huge bounty for Darnold necessarily either. They could have traded this pick to somebody who really wanted it and kept Darnold. Right. Are you good with what they did?
I'm good in the end with what they did. I've said all along they were in a no-lose situation. I could have made a case for keeping Sam Darnold. I'm a Sam Darnold defender. I think he would have been fine. I think they may have been further ahead starting this year in a rebuild or a continued rebuild. Everybody thinks the Jets are rebuilding. Joe Douglas has been there for 2 years, so this is his third season. So they should be well on their way here now. I think the biggest element that did come up, and Joe mentioned it in the press conference after Darnold left, was the resetting of the financial landscape by starting over with Zach Wilson. That's an issue nowadays. That hasn't ever really been an issue in the past, because that's never, you know, we've never dealt with the kind of money we're dealing with now. But I think this gives the Jets a chance to build with a first-time contract, a five-year deal that allows them to put the best team around them. And we've seen history prove that out, that you have your best chance to build around a quarterback when his salaries are low, and this gives him a chance to do that.
Yeah. I mean, let's get to San Francisco. I mean, this is the most interesting team, maybe in the top 10, because they've been to a Super Bowl, and then they've had a bunch of losing seasons around it. They've been they've signed Jimmy Garoppolo, but they don't really love Jimmy Garoppolo. And then they trade up from 12 to 3, and people think right away it's going to be for Mac Jones, who no one thinks should be drafted that high. But are people in the league are still convinced, a lot of them, that that's who Kyle Shanahan's going to take, because Kyle can do whatever he wants. And if he wants a guy, that's who they're going to take. And he liked Kirk Cousins and this and that. It's a lot of kind of smoke and uncertainty. When they're, to me, there doesn't need to be. They're picking third. They know who they're going to probably get if they want him. What do you make of the mud in the water around this, and who do you think they're going to pick?
Yeah, I think it's definitely, I think there's so many angles to making a move like this when they did. I think, let's face it, they're really an inexperienced group there when it comes to John, who I know and like and respect, but he hasn't been at the helm very long. They've got some younger people around him. You know, the most experienced guy in that front office was Martin Mayhew, who's left now and gone to Washington. So he's gone. So a move up like this without an exact plan would surprise me a little bit, except that I think they've decided they wanted a quarterback regardless, and they were afraid that if they didn't make this deal at 3, they weren't going to get one. Because I don't think they had any really chance to get to 4 with Atlanta, and all 4 quarterbacks could be gone, and even 5 quarterbacks at a time. So I just think this at 12 for them, they were out of the mix. They weren't going to get a quarterback the way the tea leaves were falling out. So they moved up to put all that to bed. Which quarterback they pick, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to know what to believe. All of these things. You say that Kyle in the past has liked Kirk Cousins. Well, I think Kirk Cousins was a 4th-round pick. So that's a different deal than picking a guy 3rd in the draft. So I would hope you get a clean player picking 3rd in the draft that has all the physical characteristics that you want. I would struggle with going up and picking a guy that, in my opinion, might not have all the physical characteristics you're looking for. So, and that's what I see with Mac Jones. But I also know this, and this is probably the most important thing to me, is if they are on point as having a consensus for the quarterback that they want, that's really what I'm more about. If they all believe that Mac Jones is the guy, they should take him without a doubt. And that means, you know, John Lynch, the coaches, the other front office guys, you better love a guy and all be on the same page to trade up to get a guy like that. So that's really the angle I'm most interested in. I don't know if we'll ever know that, but
you would take Justin Fields though here if you were them, just on the talent, right? I mean that would be,
I would. Yes,
yeah,
I would.
Yeah, and I think I would too. I mean, to me, he just feels like the guy. I don't think he's actually going to fall that far, but I mean, in some of the way the top 10 is discussed, it feels like, wait a minute, why isn't this guy higher, right? I mean, just watching it, taking off my glasses and not looking at too much of the detail, just look at it from 5,000 feet. This would be the guy who you would maybe even be taking above Zach Wilson even. To me, now the part about consensus, though, I'm with you. I think that ideally would be the way to go. Our whole building coalesces around a player, but I don't think that's the way it works in San Francisco. And one of the things I wrote about in my column today was just look down the road at the Rams.
Yeah,
there's not full consensus in their building that everybody voted at one time that we should trade Jared Goff and go give up multiple ones for Stafford. They did that because the head coach wanted to do it. The head coach got tired of looking at Goff and wanted a different guy. And I sort of fear or think that there's ton of power concentrated in Kyle Shanahan. Mike Shanahan's there too. And so the odds of that whole building being consensus around Mac Jones are zero to me. There's no way that we could assemble 5 people in the league or 10 people in the league and have all of them say the value of Mac Jones at 3 is outstanding. There's no one who would say that. There's no way the 49ers building all thinks that. But there is a way they take him anyway, and that's because if Kyle Shanahan is sitting there at 12 going, you know what, I want to get Mac Jones, we're not going to get him here, and why go to 8 or 5? We might not get him there either. Let's just go as high as we can, and we'll get him, and we'll worry about it later. I think there's a possibility that's what they're doing.
Yeah, that could very well be. I think I've always thought consensus is the key to making these kind of picks, but I agree with you. I think sometimes impulse, sometimes need, sometimes those things trump any consensus. I think that if you go back over history, though, and if you can do a little research project, you're going to find that more picks work out when you do have consensus as opposed to somebody trying to prove that they're right or wrong. And again, we don't know what the 49ers are going to do. They might pick Justin Fields. Hey, I got another angle on Justin Fields in that we've talked about this off air. Justin Fields has been trained by John Beck. John Beck is a former quarterback at BYU who I happened to draft when I was the GM of the Dolphins. We drafted him in the second round. When the Dolphins gave up on him, he went to the Redskins. He played for Shanahan's, both of them, in Washington, and I know for a fact they had a great relationship, and they loved John Beck coming out, and that's why they brought him in there. And I believe he might have even started some games for the Redskins. So now John Beck, you know, 20 years later, is training quarterbacks. I think the 49ers have a lot more intel on Justin Fields than anybody needs to even consider knows, and they're going to use some of that to decide what they're going to do. I think they're at a pro day today for Justin Fields, and they're saying that the script has been changed, that the teams are going to run the script. I got news for you. John Beck and Shanahan have been talking the whole time about all of this. So it's all in collusion to me, if you ask me. You know, so I don't know how it's going to work out. But there are just as many dots to connect that lead you to think that they're going to draft Justin Fields as opposed to Mac Jones. So in the end, who knows? I guess we'll find out, you know, on the first draft day. But I just, you know, again, you got to be careful how much of this information you listen to. That's for sure.
Yeah. And remember, too, Mike Shanahan and Kyle Shanahan have their hands all over that quarterback collective thing that we hear about every once in a while. And they had Justin Fields in there as early as 2017, which is a long time ago. But the point is, Kyle Shanahan isn't just finding out who Justin Fields is. You know, he's been exposed to him a ton. He's got Beck, and that could work for or against Fields, you know, depending on what actually he thinks of him. But we know he's gonna have an informed opinion on him, very informed opinion on him, for good or bad. And that could lead them to him. It could also be the reason why, you know, you may not be exactly right for us. We just don't know. And I think that's the fascinating part of not knowing is, like, we know the top two picks. You'd think we'd know the third one, and maybe we'll just have to wait. I think that's gonna be fascinating.
Yep.
To see. Okay, off of San Francisco, we got Atlanta in the fourth pick. I think what's interesting about them is I think they were kind of selling Matt Ryan to people when people were interviewing. And from what I heard, the people who interviewed were kind of saying that to Rich McKay and the owner of the team, hey, Matt Ryan's going to be there, right? Like they like having a veteran quarterback to come into. I talked to somebody from a front office and another team who was doing some homework on the Falcons and on Matt Ryan when they were sort of sizing up the veteran quarterback market. And he said he put on the tape of Matt Ryan last year and actually was pleasantly surprised. Thought, wow, he's playing better than I thought he was. So you come into that situation, you've got Matt Ryan. They just gave him a bunch of money. So there's kind of a commitment for at least a year or two. Yet you could have a chance here at four to get Justin Fields or whoever. And by the way, there's other great players that you could get, Kyle Pitts or whoever, in this spot. They're really in an interesting place here, aren't they, Randy?
Yeah, I agree. I think they're kind of in the catbird seat right now, to be honest with you. But they've got to, and I'm assuming they're doing this over the next couple of weeks, they've got to formulate their 1-2-3, right? They've got to have their dance card and exactly what they're going to do. I agree with you. And I looked at the film on Matt Ryan, and I think Matt Ryan has some life left in him. Their actions speak louder than anything else in that they redid his contract, like you said. So they're tied to Matt Ryan for a year or two. But the other factor is, when considering a quarterback, they don't think they'll ever be up here picking again. No team ever thinks they're going to be in the top 10 the following year. Very few ever get the chance. Most of the time when you're in the top 10, two or three or four times, somebody else is making the decision the year after, right? So that's the results. Now, this is a fresh regime picking fourth. It might be a time for them to look down the road. There would be nothing better to set this franchise up is if they believe in Justin Fields at all, to have him come redshirt behind Matt Ryan for a year or two. That would be ideal. You're talking about a kid that is from Atlanta. You know, he went to Georgia right away. I mean, it's tailor-made for a nice fit. So my feeling is, if Fields is there, they take him. I think you've got to have that position in mind. I think there's a chance that Fields, at least on my board, he's in the top five or six players on the board. And there's a chance he would be in their top five or six as well.
Oh, yeah.
And I think likely. So at that point, I think you've got to take Justin Fields. So, but for some reason, if the 49ers take him and you're sitting there then at four, I think you've got to figure out a way to trade back in any way you can. I think trading back is their next best option besides taking Justin Fields. And if you can't make a deal, let me just say this. Everybody always says, we should trade back and get more picks. Trade back and get more picks. Yeah, okay. You need to come sit in the chair for a couple hours and make 30 calls and figure out you can't make any moves. So that's a two teams to dance there, and no guarantee that's going to happen.
Yeah, so let's say that were the hypothetical. Then let's just say that Justin Fields did go to the 49ers, right? So now you've got really the top three quarterback prospects on probably what? I mean, just from a talent standpoint, on 90% of boards probably would be gone, right? So let's just say then they don't necessarily feel like they want to do Trey Lance or somebody at that spot. Will somebody else want to? You know, that's what you said. It's easier said than done to trade back. But, you know, we know Cincinnati's not taking a quarterback at five. We think Miami's probably not. Detroit, who knows? I mean, they could be in the mix for anything. Carolina, we think, is in with Darnold. Denver, you know, really could maybe use a quarterback. Could you see a team going into four to take a quarterback who isn't Wilson, Lawrence, or Fields?
Yeah, I don't think so, because I think Trey Lance is a little bit of a project. And again, the key is how you feel about the Alabama kid. I think you've got to have, if you're Atlanta, a pick in mind. And if you can't trade out of that spot to gain some more assets, for me, the tackle from Oregon, Penei Sewell, is the guy. Because again, I'm drafting value up here, good players that cost a lot of money in the second contract. So I'm going to get my 5 years out of this guy before. And I think Sewell does that. If you look at their cap, Mike, they're tied to Matthews, the tackle, for giant money. I don't know that that's going to be, I don't know if it's going to be feasible in the next year or two. So I'm drafting Penei Sewell. I don't even care where they play him. They can play him at right tackle. They can play him at guard. I don't care. But eventually he's going to be your left tackle. I just think that versatility that he brings to the table is too much for them to just throw up their hands and pick a shiny object, a tool like a receiver or even a tight end or something like that. I'm picking with what I said initially, a big man, and that I think he fits the bill, and I think that would be a great pick for them at four.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
One of the things on my little napkin off to the side here, my note, you wanted to talk about the tackles in this class. We can use this as an opportunity, but we also sort of scratched in here in our notes, you know, what about Kyle Pitts? And I see, you know, you've written in here, you know, you're comparable to him would be Megatron. I mean, couldn't you do that if you're Atlanta there?
You could, but here's the other thing. Penei Sewell is playing every snap. You're getting him for 65 snaps a game, provided he's healthy. I'm going to take that big man value over any little man weapon type guy. And I love Kyle Pitts. He's the second guy on my board, I'll be honest with you. That's how much really? I like him. Yes. And I think I compare him to Megatron. I don't think Kyle Pitts is a tight end. I don't think he's a receiver. I think he's all the above. That's how good I think he is. I think he's a matchup nightmare. I don't know who they're going to put on him. I think the defense has to be aware of him all the time. And guess what? If you do cover Kyle Pitts, you might still not be able to do anything about him catching the ball because he's going to make contested catches outside his frame all over the place. So I do think he's a really good player. I just think I'm going to err on the side of, not err, but I'm going to take the bigger guy right now first, in my opinion. I'd love to have Kyle Pitts. And that's a great fallback spot. If Atlanta were to trade back, let's just say Miami has something in mind. They want to go up and get a defensive player. You might be able to fall back to six and still get Kyle Pitts. So those are the fun things about strategizing in my mind.
Okay, so we'll get into those tackles in a couple more picks. I think we can do that when we get down to Detroit. But you mentioned your board, Randy. I mean, is this thing, I'm picturing your office here, it's covered, you know, your one of your kids walks in and you have to hurry and cover the board here, right? I mean, this is private. So tell us about your board. I mean, do you have it pretty well stacked? Could you tell us who your top five is? Let's hear about this board.
Well, this board is about as detailed as this napkin can spread out and unfold on my my desk. I have 10 guys who I would be happy with and in an order that I like them. That's the basis for my board. These staffs have worked on this 364 days a year. They might take Christmas Day off. They have everything under the sun and all kinds of opinions. Those of us on the outside, there's no way we can keep up with that. Even the gurus of Mel Kiper and Todd McShay, they can't build the kind of operation that these teams have. So I try to find, as I'm sitting here, I want to find 10 guys I'd be happy with picking three or four. And nobody stacks their top 10 the same. And so that's all I've done is gone through and picked these guys out. I happen to have the quarterbacks we've talked about. I have three quarterbacks in there. I think the interesting part is, like you said, maybe some of the tackles we'll talk about, but I only have one defensive guy in my top 10, and I stretch to find him. But we digress. So let's move on to the next group, and maybe we can hit on some of these guys that I happen to really like. And again, just because I like them doesn't mean anybody else likes them, because I've got an offensive lineman or two that I see or never see or hear people even talking about in the first round. So it just depends on the flavor you prefer.
Okay, so Cincinnati is our fifth team on the clock here. They have Joe Burrow. They need to help him. Could be reunited with his old college teammate, the receiver from LSU, Ja'Marr Chase. There's been talk about, you know, would they do one of the tackles if they were there? They've sort of covered themselves a little bit in the short term with a Riley Reiff signing. They've drafted the tackle from Alabama, I believe, you know, previously. So they wouldn't necessarily have to do that, but you could. It's really not a bad spot for them, is it? I mean, they're going to they're going to get the best player at a position that's going to help them.
I think they have some options without a doubt, and it might be the place where Kyle Pitts falls. You know, if Atlanta does what I think and takes a tackle, Kyle Pitts might be there at five. I don't think they could ever go wrong picking guys to keep Joe Burrow upright. I don't know that there's a defensive player at this spot worthy of that pick, but you know, you could always, and don't forget, they signed Riley Reiff, but Riley Reiff was ran out of Minnesota, really. He was offered a pay cut last year during camp. So there's been some decline in production from him, and I happen to like him, but I think he could also play guard as well. You know, if Penei Sewell is there, I think it's a no-brainer for Cincinnati. But I think the other tackle for my money is the Northwestern kid, Rashawn Slater, who I think could play right tackle, could play left tackle. They can fit him in, and he's going to his strength is pass protection. So I think he leads the second group of tackles outside of Penei for me anyway.
So I've already sort of figured out, I'm piecing together part of your board here, just being the intrepid reporter that I am. I got Trevor Lawrence number one, I'm guessing, and you said Kyle Pitts was number two. Do you have, I'm just thinking of, how high do you have a wide receiver, and would you consider Ja'Marr Chase in that slot, or a different one? You love Devontae Smith. You told me during the season, look out for Devontae Smith. Now you've had a chance to look at other guys and have a little bit of a clearer picture. Now for Cincinnati, would you consider that? I know you want to go big guys, but...
Yeah, I'm not big on the Chase, the LSU receiver's skill set. I'll be honest with you. I've heard people say he's a generational talent and this and that. Maybe for me, I just am not seeing it clearly. I like him. I think he's going to be a good player. I still like Devontae Smith as the best receiver. I just think his body of work is unmatched. He plays bigger than he is. There's just so many reasons for me. And I do have Devontae Smith as the only receiver in the top 10, other than Kyle Pitts, who, again, I think Kyle Pitts, if people want to get a picture of him, just think Megatron at Detroit, because that's what he is. He's big, he's fast, can get away from tight coverage, he can catch over big guys. Devontae Smith is a different flavor, but his game is versatile. He'll go inside. He can run deep. He's fast. He's a little slight. Yep, I get it. But I think there's enough of a difference-making playmaker here that he's worthy of being a top 10 pick.
That's okay. Miami next, they're interesting just to me because they went from 3 to 12 and then felt like we better get back up to 6. And not only we better do it, we're going to do it really early at a fairly high price. Gave up a first-round pick to do it. Makes sense to you? I mean... And what do you want for them, you know?
I think Miami might be the first team to venture on the defensive side, to be honest with you. You know, they run that 3-4 defense that New England runs, and they're looking for big bodies. They're looking for five techniques. They're not necessarily looking for edge rushers. This edge rusher position has kind of come out of nowhere, and now I see on all of the social media sites, and everybody has a position of edge rusher. I got news for you. When we were in Miami and Nick Saban was my boss, we didn't even have a position for edge rusher. That's not a position. In fact, I'll tell you a quick story. We were going through our draft one year, right before the draft, and we had everything stacked. And one of the exercises I always like to do is give everybody in your room a chance to pick one card that you think is out of place and put it somewhere on the board. Too low, too high, blah, blah, blah. And Nick was in there. And Nick said, how about you? Who do you want to move around? And I had penciled in, this was the year Tamba Hali came out.
Yeah.
And Kansas City, I think, picked him early on. And I loved Tamba Hali. I thought he was outstanding. But he was more of an edge rusher than anything else. And I said, Coach, I think we're too low on Hali, blah, blah, blah. He looked at me like I had three eyes and said, hey, we don't have that position. We don't have a spot for him. In Nick's scheme, which I concur with, we had a no-fit file, a no-fit column for guys that didn't fit our defense. And a lot of these edge rushers, now that I see on all these gurus' lists of edge rushers, they wouldn't even be on Nick Saban's board. And I understand it because they don't have a position to play. When we run 11 guys out there to start, this guy's not running out there because he's not really a linebacker. He's too small to play defensive end. I see a lot of edge rushers people have erred on when drafting in the past. I think there's a long list of litany guys, and it's all about fit, right? They just don't fit. It sounds great to say we're going to get 10 sacks out of this guy. Well, it seldom works out like that because the offense doesn't tell you when they're going to pass every down. So we can rush out our edge rusher because we're going to throw the ball here. It's a versatile game, and you got to be able to play the run and the pass both. And so that's my thinking on that. But I do think Miami is a team that could go defense. And the guy I like is actually a Miami kid. He's Jalen Phillips. He's a grad transfer from UCLA. You know, he's just under 270 pounds. He plays really strong with his hands. And I think this guy is an edge setting rusher that's just coming into his own. He had a really good year with Miami this year. There were some things that happened at UCLA that you'd want to be comfortable with off the field. But I like him at this position. And I think most people have him as a first round player. But this would be a point in that first round where I think Miami might take a defensive lineman.
So you don't think that's too early? We haven't seen him. Is he going to be a surprise player who comes up that early? Or is he just more somebody who could fit a Miami-type team and maybe he's picked later?
I think both. I think the guy is a first-round pick for sure. I think there's a couple defensive linemen. And I'll mention another kid and I'm going to butcher his name. He's a Vanderbilt defensive tackle. It's D-A-Y-O, kind of Dayo Odingbo.
Odingbo.
And he only played 8 games this year. And he was headed to go to the Super Bowl, headed to go to the Senior Bowl, and blew his Achilles out a week before the Senior Bowl. So he's kind of disappeared off people's radars. But this kid was a really good player at Vandy. And in a year when I think interior defensive linemen are few and far between, I would not be surprised to see this kid sneak up in that mid-first round. He's that explosive. He can play all the positions. And that's another reason I like this Jalen Phillips kid at Miami. He can play all the positions because he's big enough. He can rush over the nose. He can play three. He can play five. You're looking for versatility. And to find versatility in a defensive lineman, it comes with having to have some size and some strong hands and be able to play the run. And I think both these guys play the run well enough to where I think a defensive lineman somewhere from here down to 15, maybe one or two of these guys go, and I happen to like those two guys especially.
You know, what stood out to me when you were talking about Nick Saban, Randy, was like, wait a minute, you're going to tell me that we don't have a spot on our team for Tom Bahaly? Well, that's Nick Saban's fault, isn't it? I mean, do we have to be so rigid in our defense that we can't have Tom Bahaly's one of the best five players on the field every time he's on the field, right? I mean, that part just stood out to me. I don't know if we want to get into it, but
I just think at the time he was He played a position that we didn't have. That was a fact. We did not have that. And I think it's more, I think, a credit to having a disciplined job description and process for identifying and finding your players and being okay with not being able to fit everybody into it. That's really what I took from it. I'd been with a lot of coaches prior to that, and you're always looking for a way to fit this player in or that player into our scheme. Wait a second. If they don't fit, let's don't force it. It's okay. And we had a column especially for guys that didn't fit, and some of those guys went in the first round. But Nick was okay with that. I'm surely not going to say he's doing it wrong, that's for sure.
Yep.
Because I understand it, and I appreciated the discipline that he showed. He was okay with passing on a guy like Tom Bahaly. That's just the way it is. You can't make a spot for everybody.
Yep. No, that's a really good point. Detroit's next on here, and when I did my little thing, you know, Sewell was somehow still available there, and it was just a no-brainer. Just give him there because the value would be too much. And, Randy, you have drafted a Hall of Fame tackle in this range before. You drafted Walter Jones, sixth overall in 1997 for Seattle. Remember, that was the year that Orlando Pace was coming out, and every mock draft, Orlando Pace, amazing this. Walter Jones was better than Orlando Pace, actually. I don't know if
they both made the Hall of Fame, right?
They both made the Hall of Fame. Yeah. So there, I mean, he was. There's not a list of people that are better than Walter Jones ever. So no. If you could get Penny Sewell, first off, I just want to ask you. I mean, is Penny Sewell comparable to that? I mean, that's ridiculous, almost to say until we know. And I'm sure you weren't saying on draft day that Walter Jones for sure is going to be a Hall of Famer. He had that kind of talent. Is Sewell in that mold? And then how do you see the other tackles in this class? Because if you looked at him.
Yeah, I don't think Sewell is a Walter Jones, but that's a rare commodity. You're talking about combination of power, strength, and athleticism all in one. And I was lucky. I had him, and then I went to New Orleans, and Willie Rofe was waiting there. So I've been around a couple of these guys, you know, and it's a position that's really hard to find. Do I think Penny Sewell could be a perennial Pro Bowl player? Yes, he has that ability. I think there's some finer points to his game that still have to develop. Maybe the finishing part, he doesn't sustain all of his run blocks like he should. I think more apt, because he's so aggressive, that he gets out over his pads a little bit and sometimes can't keep his balance. But those are minor details. I think Penny Sewell would be a great pick for the Lions at 7. I don't see any way he's there. I had Slater, you know, like I said, mentioned after him, the Northwestern kid. And if they ended up wanting to go with another offensive tackle and these two guys are gone, there's a kid at Alabama that I think the last three or four games of the year played as good as any tackle in the business, and that's Alex Leatherhood. And I hear his name. I've seen some mock drafts and some places that have him as their 8th or 10th tackle. I think that's crazy. But it does show me that it depends on when you see these guys as well. That's why I like to have a room of scouts that have seen him at different points all through their season. So your evaluation doesn't just come on a 3-game window, you know, week 2 through 5. And I saw Leatherwood at the end of the Alabama season against top talent, and I'd have no problem picking him in the first round. And in fact, I'd have no problem picking him in the top 10. So I don't know what Detroit's going to do. I think the thing that's interesting to me about Detroit is you're talking about a hierarchy of an assistant to the president in Spielman, a GM who Brad Holmes, a coach who Dan Campbell. None of these guys have ever picked a player ever.
And by the way, John Dorsey's got a really loud voice, and he's there. Yeah. I mean, just physically, his voice is loud. You talk about loudest voices in the room, and John Dorsey has picked great players.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I just don't know how it's going to go there is my point.
Yeah.
So I think the inexperience mixed in with what John might do, which might be anything, I find that's going to be a hard spot to nail down on what they're going to do. You know, now John could just come right up and tell somebody what they're going to do too. You never know, you know.
I'd love to see this.
The inexperience of those other guys there, I don't have a read on it, I guess is what I'm saying.
No, I'm with you. I think that would be a really interesting one. But they're going to probably get a really good player. So,
yep.
Carolina's eight. They've sort of been interesting this offseason because we've heard they wanted Deshaun Watson. I mean, we heard, in on a quarterback. Then they got Sam Darnold. But then we've almost heard that they could still be interested in quarterbacks. Don't know if I believe that. Is this a spot where we find a defensive player? Or do you think that they need to be, you talk about we're not just collecting talent, we got to build a team. If you're building this team and you just got Darnold, how does that play into it?
Well, I think they are somewhat predictable in that I think Matt Rhule's style is evident. I think he has discipline when acquiring players. Let's face it, he's an offensive coach, and last year they drafted all defense. Every draft pick was on defense. So I think he's going to have to address the offensive line. I think there's big bodies available that are going to be good players for him. And I would hope that they would draft tackles, not guards, not centers, but draft another one of these tackles and be fine with it. I think that is insurance against Sam Darnold or whoever is playing quarterback. So I guess what I'm saying is I think Matt Rhule is going to build a team and has shown already evidence of how he wants to do it. He's going to take big players or a fast player. And I think he's going to probably err on the side of a big player this year. And again, Mike McCormick used to always say this in Seattle. It's not the sexy pick, right? It's not. But we're building a team. So a tackle that we can move around, whether it's a Leatherwood kid or another one of these tackles, there's four or five of these guys that I think are all NFL tackles. I just don't see how you can go wrong from a team building standpoint and from a value standpoint. Those are the guys that get paid $20 million in their second or third contract. So let's get them while they're young. Let's find a way to keep them around for 5, 6, 7 years, work their contracts the way we can. And I think you get value picking tackles in this spot.
I really feel that has a lot of merit. When you look at their team and just sort of look at their depth chart, I think that would make everybody there feel a lot better. They sort of are missing one guy, one tackle probably for their offensive line. And then you feel pretty good about what they did. You know, and it could sort of set them on a course. And, you know, like you said, that tackle could be there a long time playing a ton of snaps, hopefully, and going to be making a lot more money later. So I do agree. I think that's a good one for them. Denver now at nine, you know, sort of has Drew Locke. I mean, I know you watched some Drew Locke film this week and you weren't ready to run out and declare him the next John Elway in Denver. But they have a new GM who, from all indications, I think George Payton is calling the shots. I don't think it's John Elway over his shoulder telling him we're going to do this or that. So maybe they have some flexibility to do a quarterback here, yet the value may not be ideal at nine, depending who's available. Is this easy for you based on watching Drew Locke? Do they have to get a quarterback here?
Well, a couple things. I don't think it's easy. Having perused some Bronco film the last few days, I was really disappointed really with their offense in total. I mean, it was kind of the shambles in a few of the weeks. I mean, they struggled to pick up blitzes. They struggled to complete balls to second and third level players consistently. A lot of that falls on Drew Locke. I was taken back by how there was a lack of really instincts and anticipation with him. I think he's a prime example of a guy that works out awesome, can make all the throws, physically gifted kid, but had a little trouble connecting the dots and getting the ball to the right guys. He's just one of those guys that I think he looks, but he doesn't always see. And that's a concerning factor for me. So I do think quarterback has to be high. They've been in the middle of every quarterback deal. They just haven't pulled it off. They were in the Stafford deal. I know they've been on Seattle about Russell Wilson. I'm sure they were in the Darnold deal as well. Just couldn't figure out a way to put it together. How about this, though? And I hear more and more about this. Our aforementioned Jeopardy host that we talked a little bit about.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers.
That bridge seems to be burning just a little bit more every day we go. What if the Broncos just went all in at nine and gave next year's pick and anything else to the Packers for Aaron Rodgers? Whatever they had to do, go get him. I don't care if we got to put, who's the rusher from A&M that they have? Von Miller, put him in there too. Put them all in. I'm going all in to bail the Packers out of a problem that they seem to value more than anything else, this Jordan Love kid, let's call their bluff. And here's why I think it might make some sense to the Packers. If I'm them, I'm worried a little bit about what Aaron Rodgers' next move is going to be. He might just tell them to shove it, right? And I've had enough. They didn't redo his contract, and he's not looking for more money, but they need cap space to add to it. I just think that I see a divorce coming here sooner than I thought initially. And if I'm George, and I know George, and he knows talent, I just might go all in any way I can to get things stirred up a little bit more in Green Bay and see if there's something there. Does that sound crazy?
Yeah, and George was sitting in Minnesota for all those years, so he had way too close of a seat, you know. It was kind of like when you were in Seattle and Elway was in the freaking AFC West, and you got to look at him every week. You know, he's looking at Aaron Rodgers every week, and so
the other thing is, the longer Green Bay keeps Aaron Rodgers, his value is going to start to go down at some point. So why not, at peak of powers, MVP status, would I take 3 first-round picks for Aaron Rodgers?
Well, when you know you have to get, you know that the wall is coming here soon, not for his performance, but you gave yourself a deadline. Look.
Yeah. And have held to it.
You picked Jordan Love. You got to live with this thing.
Yep.
So when he was picked, I mean, we all were saying at the time, I don't think he gets traded now. He probably doesn't get traded a year from now. But he's getting traded in two. The over-under was 1.5 to 2 years, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think it speeds up when you consider the new information. The fact that they didn't redo his contract and they did everybody else's in the building. So I just think there's a little bit of a fire brewing there that if Aaron Rodgers wants to tell him to shove off, I think he can do it and maybe force their hand. And again, I'm never one to take the side of the player in something like this because I don't think they hold all the cards. I think in this case, he holds a lot of cards.
He holds a lot of cards.
Yeah.
The Jeopardy host. We have traded Aaron Rodgers to the Denver Broncos. I mean, sometimes these podcasts go off the rails, but we've really done it now. I mean, this is going to be shocking news to Mark Murphy and the Packers, but what a fun discussion. Did we give Denver a player? I think we're going to give them maybe a quarterback somehow, some way, right?
Well, they've got to do something on offense, Mike, in my opinion. They've spent a little money on defense. They've kept some guys that were on their team before, Justin Simmons and Von Miller, and they can get by, I think, defensively. Everybody can use another big body up front. But offensively, like I said, the film kind of set me back a little bit. I was surprised at some of the things they've done. You know, they've drafted a couple little tiny receivers. They've drafted a couple offensive linemen, interior guys that haven't played up to their expectations. Mike Munchak's got his job planned out for him, that's for sure. That's a tough gig right now. They've got to add some talent to offense one way or another.
That's interesting, because I think there's a perception among, it's kind of, maybe it's a media perception, that, hey, they've got a good offense ready to go, right? These weapons they've drafted and whatever they've done, they got better play from Garrett Bowles, their left tackle, who was a bust at one point. And, you know, I don't know if they're ever going to get anything out of Juwan James, but, I mean, they did sign him to a big money deal a while back. But what you're saying, just looking at the film, is it's not that simple. I mean, they're a little bit further away offensively.
I think there's some more issues that they've got to overcome. And it could start. I was disappointed in really their protection scheme and how they attack things. Hmm. Some of that might be as easy as saying they had a rookie center last year. A rookie kid that really, and I'm, that kind of goes against my thinking of throwing a rookie out there, because he's the glue, right? He's the communicator. They can get overwhelmed so quickly. And I drafted LeCharles Bentley in New Orleans. I drafted Samson Satelli in Miami, both projected centers and played center in college, but we played them at guard their first year just so they could get their feet wet and settle in. And that didn't happen to this kid in Denver. They started a rookie center most of the year. And I think they struggled communicating. And again, that would be hard to coach just because he hasn't seen it at the speed that he sees it on Sundays. So maybe he'll be better, but I think they've got some upgrading to do in several areas on offense for sure. But it starts with the quarterback.
You know, what's interesting about that too, is we know San Francisco is going to take a quarterback. So they bring in Alex Mack. I mean, the calm down the line, take the pressure off the quarterback if you're going to have a new guy in there, or even if it's Garoppolo. And then the Chargers too have Herbert, who's their best thing they got going. They brought in Corey Linsley, and you can argue about the deals and the money, but that's a comforting thing for a quarterback to have a guy snapping it to him who knows what he's doing.
And I've had a chance to look at some of the interviews that teams have done with these quarterbacks as well. So you can kind of see who's further along and what they've been asked to do. That's the one thing as an evaluator on the outside, most don't get a chance to gather is intel from within a school, talking to sources, talking to coaches, or observing these interviews when coaches put them on the board. And there's some interesting things that come of it. So what we see on film is very important, probably the most important thing. But when it comes to quarterbacks, there's a processing issue that, you know, is definitely a factor that doesn't get a lot of run from the outside outside sources for sure.
Yep, absolutely. Well, let's go to 10 in our top 10 here. We have Dallas, you know, one of our favorite teams, right, Randy? I mean, we've had them. I think we both had them going to the Super Bowl in the 70s, but we did not have them going to the Super Bowl this last season. We were sort of, we've been skeptical on them, but let's give them a fair shake here. I mean, they're at 10. At this point in the draft, when I sort of did my thing on The Athletic today, I mean, I was kind of looking defense for them. This could be a prime place to maybe go that direction if there's all these offensive guys going off the board first. What do you think about them, and would you give them the corner, you know?
Well, I definitely agree that defense is the way they probably need to go. I mean, we all just have to watch a couple films from last year to see what kind of a shambles their defense was. It was historically bad, right? And you'd love to see them find another big guy or somebody that can, you know, at least hold the point of attack. They got pushed around all over the field. And in Dan Quinn's system, you know, yeah, it was a Seattle system, but let's not forget Dan Quinn worked for Nick Saban as well and has some of that Will Muschamp, some of that background in him on defense as well. And that starts with a big nose guard. But I don't know that one of those guys is going to be available to them. It's just seems to me like an interior defensive line position is really thin this year. I think people are going to struggle there. But you're right. There are a couple corners that they can't go wrong picking those guys. I mean, you're talking about Patrick Surtain or J.C. Horn. Those are the two top rated by most, and I would fall into that category. The thing I like about Surtain is that he went to Alabama, right? And I will say this, and I always talk about Nick, but he's the best defensive back coach I've ever been around. I mean, it's not even close. This guy gets the most out of everybody. I know this, if you get Patrick Surtain Jr., he's going to have thick skin because he can take hard coaching. He's going to understand the principles of playing the position. He's going to be fundamentally sound. And I think that's all ingredients that Dallas missed out on the last couple of years. They need to be more fundamental. They need to be more intuitive to what their individual jobs are. And I think Dan Quinn will bring that element to him. But I don't see how they could go wrong with picking a guy like him. And I'm sure Dan Quinn will have inside intel on any Alabama guys as well, having a little bit of a history with Nick. So I think that's. And when I said earlier in the podcast that we need to build the team, not collect talent, I probably had Dallas in mind because they seem to be a team that always kind of goes for a flashy, you know, bass lure instead of really honing in on are there any fish in this pond? And so they need to build their team. And I think a pick on defense really helps them go a ways toward that. I don't think it's going to solve everything because I think they've got multiple issues. But I think in the secondary is probably as good as they're going to find right now. I do think they'll look to trade out of that spot. They always do, which I think is always smart to have an option. And there may be somebody willing to come up for one of these guys at that point. But time will tell on that.
Yeah. You know, they did do a nice job for a while, though, building that offensive line. And that was sort of one thing in the back of my mind here, you know, is Tyron Smith's missed about 25 games the last three or four years. He missed almost all the season last year. He's only 30, but he's, you know, had some issues and that line has fallen off. And you've put a lot of money into Dak Prescott. Could you consider, like you said, you had three tackles in your, you know, in your top dozen or so players. Could that be a good position for them? Would that be a good sort of building block? You know, hey, let's make this a strength again.
They played with some guys last year that, in my opinion, Mike, aren't NFL players. And some of that was due to injury. And I agree, they had an offensive line 4 or 5 years ago that everybody would love to have. I don't think we're looking at that group now. So I don't think you could ever go wrong picking another big body up there. If it's an edge player, if it's someone that can play left tackle or right tackle, I'm again, not for drafting into your guys up this high, but a tackle is a total different animal. And if they can find a way to get one of those, and I think there are a couple worthy ones, I think that's an option for them as well. So they've got some options at 10. I do think that.
All right, Randy, we have made it through the top 10 and we need a little, you know, music here for the breaking news coming in. Kent Garrison, our producer, telling us that the Cleveland Browns have reached agreement on a one-year contract with Jadeveon Clowney. We'll wait on the money part because, as you know, Randy, there's a lot of this time of year worth up to, worth could be, you know, we don't know what it's worth, but I think a 1-year deal tells us plenty. I've been a little down on him the last couple of years. I mean, he's made $19 million bucks the last 2 years without really playing a lot. And I just haven't sensed this. I haven't sensed, I don't know what it is, an edge to him, you know. So, yet at the same time, I was just texting back and forth with a friend of mine who used to work in the league who follows the Browns, and he was more excited than I was. This could be good for Cleveland, I guess, right? I mean, a good environment, a good team.
Yeah, I think it can be. I think a couple things on Clowney, that he's kind of been miscast, right? And I think that's where the disappointment comes. That's where everybody kind of sighs or rolls their eyes on Clowney. He came out of South Carolina. Everybody said, oh, this guy's an edge rusher. He's a pass rusher. He's long. He's lean. He's exactly what you're looking for. And that's kind of carried him for 6 or 8 years in the league, right? He's an outside rusher. He's really not. That's really not what he does. And I think more than an edge rusher, he's an edge setter, right? He plays the run really good. And I thought that when Seattle signed him, before they signed him, I thought it when Tennessee signed him. If people will just use him as a five technique or as a run player, and maybe he doesn't want to do that, I think he serves a purpose and is a valuable piece. Now, you don't pay $10 or $12 million a year for these kind of skill sets, but it's a meat and potatoes job that if Clowney was willing to do this, I think he serves purpose, and I think that's what the Browns see him as. I think they see him as a run defender more than a pass rusher. So he's kind of been miscast in my mind. I do think the health is definitely an issue, but if I know Andrew Berry like I think I do, this contract is going to be incentive-laden with active roster bonuses to have to dress and play to get paid. That's when it could maybe approach multi-millions. That's when there's value there. So if they do a smart contract... Yeah. Which obviously covers them if he doesn't play, which kind of alleviates your issue. I don't know how hungry this guy is, but if he's willing to do the dirty work and can stay healthy, he has the skill set to play the run and do some things, if nothing else, to hold the point and hold the edge. And those are valuable tools.
You know what I like about it, too? When you were saying that, the light bulb was going off in my head that he plays the run. Well, who do you got to beat in that division? You got to beat Baltimore. They run the ball.
No doubt.
First down, if there was a fifth down, they'd be running the ball. You know, I mean, they're the most run-heavy, run-dominant team that there is in the league. And we've seen, you know, people tried to say, I'll just say this. There's a lot of guys I'd rather have hitting Lamar Jackson on a running play than Jadeveon Clowney. And when you just go back to that playoff game, I'm not comparing Carson Wentz to Lamar Jackson, but, you know, he just sort of accidentally dinged him, you know,
and he tore
you
him
have,
up.
And he didn't play the rest of the game. So also the thing about Clowney is he's been on a line before where there was someone else everyone was worried about, J.J. Watt. And so you get to go to Cleveland, you got Myles Garrett, clearly the top dog, right? I mean, he's clearly one of the top two or three defensive maybe players, but linemen in the league. So that could help him too. And when he was in Seattle, he didn't have that.
Yeah, I just think people are always jumping to measure via numbers and statistics. Yeah. And this guy's, I think, effectiveness can't be measured that way at all. So everybody says, oh, he's made 3 sacks in 2 years. Well, maybe so. But if he's healthy, he can play a run role that helps them defend run. And again, in that division, I think you have to be able to stop the run to have a chance. And I think he would, again, maybe be a role player in doing that. I'm not saying he's the guy, and I don't think he has to be the guy, like you pointed out, in Cleveland.
Yeah, yep. So we like that. I love your idea on the contract, too. If it's a smart contract, he gets paid for playing in the games, then I'm all for it. Then I think it's a great deal. And I think this year will define what he really is. You know, is he the guy who's just sort of hanging on for one or two more paydays? Or is he, you know, he's not that old. I mean, or does he have a long-term contract or at least a 3-year deal in him after this? Maybe he can earn that on a team that could really, you know, use defensive talent as they try to close the gap in the AFC with teams that are really good. So that was one of the moves. We have a couple other running back signings, Randy. You know, James Conner goes to Pittsburgh. I looked at it. He's only 25, you know, and he doesn't have a ton of carries. So maybe that's not a bad signing. Did you like him coming out or just so-so?
Well, I love the story of James Conner, you know, a Pittsburgh kid that's kind of come through cancer. He's come through some health issues. Arizona signed him this week. Here's the thing about Connor. He's a meat and potatoes guy. He's kind of a downhill between the tackles guy. And maybe they felt with losing Kenyon Drake, they can replace that a little bit with a steady hand. He's not explosive. He's not fast. He's not going to do a lot of things to help them in the passing game per se. So I think it's a nice fit. Is it one I'm jumping up and down about that makes them better? Probably not, but he does bring some depth to the table as well. I don't know that it's a great fit in Cliff Kingsbury's spread offense, but
yeah,
he does bring some things to the table, and I think he'll be there. He's a guy that they can count on more than anything else. The other one that excited me, though, was the Gio Bernard signing, leaving the Bengals, you know, when they cut him last week, and he goes to Tampa Bay.
I love that way better for the team. Like,
yes.
You know, when we're, and I can kind of read your body language and know what you're saying. When we're talking about Arizona, it's sort of like James Conner's another guy people have heard of. And yeah, it's kind of like Arizona just puts together these guys. And it's like, hey, we got James Conner. Right. Hey, we got J.J. Watt. Hey, we got this guy. Hey, we got that guy. But what is, how does it all fit together?
Yeah.
And we're not really sure.
Oh, we're collecting players. We're collecting a few players.
Yeah. We're not sure on the fit, and yeah, we don't have a proven track record coach of fitting them together, knowing exactly what we want. We've just sort of, we're throwing another guy in there, and we got James, yep, Conner. When you see Gio Bernard go to the team that has Bruce Arians, former Arizona coach, but with, I mean, he's got a real clear vision of what he wants to be and do. Tom Brady is influencing that, knows exactly how he wants to play. This could be exciting. Are there, I mean, it's a role. We're not like we're asking him to come in and be the bell cow back, right? I mean, there's a role for him on the team for those people who've wanted them to have a little more juice at that position.
Right. I think there's definitely a role for him, but I also think in the back of my mind that role could expand quickly. There was a market for Bernard. I know Seattle was kicking the tires. A couple other teams were kicking the tires. This kid is evasive. He's got some juice, like you said. He's explosive at times, and he can also play in the passing game. I thought going down the stretch, even though Tampa Bay won the Super Bowl, I thought this position was lacking for them. I know Leonard Fournette, and we're happy to have him back and all that. Leonard Fournette got cut by the Jaguars, okay? He had very little market, not a lot of people after him. Even when they were going down the stretch, I remember watching the film and saying, boy, if this team just had some juice, if they had somebody in the backfield that could go. And I just didn't see it. I saw the Ronald, the kid from USC, when he would get in there, there was a little more juice. I just don't see Fournette as having a lot of, you know, make you miss ability or getting north and south fast. He gets downhill a little bit, but never played, in my opinion, even last year, to his potential. I think a guy like Bernard could be attractive because I think Bruce Arians is going to find that this guy can do more than he thinks if he can stay healthy. He has, I think, the skill set that sets that offense up a step above where they were last year. So I thought it was a really good signing.
And, you know, I'm just calling him up here. You know, so he's 29. Usually we don't like adding a 29 back. Screw that, because we're in the Super Bowl window. Yeah. We just want it. We need him for 1 year, really. Right. I mean, maybe if it's two, that would be great. But we just need him for 1 year. We know exactly what we're doing as a team. Randy, he's the last 4 years, he's played 16 games, 16 games, 12, 16. Heck, I'll take that. And and even last year, 47 catches, 355 yards, 3 touchdowns. Now, that's playing in Cincinnati where Burrow wasn't even playing most of the year.
Right.
So what can you do with Tom Brady in a well-schemed offense? Shoot, there's a nice role, really nice role for him there. So
I think it's more of the same in that Tom Brady makes people look at you different. If this kid had options, he probably could have gone somewhere else, maybe even to Seattle or somewhere, and got a little more money. But he wanted to jump on the Tom Brady bandwagon, especially for 1 year, kind of reestablish himself in the market. So, again, I think Tom Brady's paying more dividends there than we even know, and it's a nice fit. I agree.
Yep, I like that one. We got a couple more things we wanted to get to. You know, one of my colleagues at The Athletic, Jordan Rodrigue, wrote a really nice piece on the Rams and their scouting process that, if you haven't seen it, check it out. Really, really good. But it just hit on some interesting points, Rain. I know you've been in the scouting game a long time, and basically the Rams are trying to be more efficient by doing kind of less in-person stuff, right? I mean, just not having their guys on the road all the time, not just going to every workout because it's the way it's always been done, maybe not emphasizing as much some of the things that, you know, I don't know how much. I think the 40's been overrated anyway forever. But you know what I mean, just kind of reassessing it. And it was a great year to do that anyway with the pandemic, but they're doing beyond that. What stood out to you about the story? And, you know, do you think this is going to be a trend?
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed the story. I think it's great points. For me, having kind of come up in the scouting end of it, I thought, and I took it more as confirmation of things that I had felt forever. Yeah. I've always thought pro days workouts at Indy. I'll be honest, Mike, I'm not smart enough to be able to tell you if a lineman can play watching him run around in shorts for 10 minutes through bags. Or some of these other guys, some of the things they do at the Underwear Olympics in Indianapolis, you know, I just don't see it. So I don't see a lot of value there. I know I went for 10 years straight with the Chargers and twiddled my thumbs. I just didn't know what, I mean, yeah, the interviews are important, but it's really for the medical information. So yes, this column wrote all about the things that they've kind of pulled back the reins on, including not sending out so many people to, whether it's the Senior Bowl or to the Combine. I got news for you. Bill Polian never sent scouts to the Combine in Indianapolis for years, and that was Indianapolis. And he had a lot of guys that lived there. So he's believed this, and I've always believed this too. But you kind of end up being a victim of, you know, CYA, right? You do a lot of things just because it's been done that way for so long. I've always been on the other side of that. I want to find more efficient ways to spend our time. I really do. I don't want to do things the same way just because we've done them forever. So I'm glad to see Les Snead making some of these moves, because some of them take some balls to change the format of the way you do things. And I can respect that. I appreciate it. And I like it. I think there's a lot more efficient ways to spend our time than the way we've done it forever. And you mentioned the 40-yard dash. I agree. 40-yard dash is way overrated, in my opinion. I can watch a guy on tape and tell you if he's fast enough or not. And really, that's what I want to gauge is football speed. I don't necessarily want to gauge 40-yard dash speed. I remember Chuck Knox back in the day used to laugh at 40-yard dash speed. He'd say, you guys come back here with these guys that run 4.4. And he said, let me pick a hand-picked guy and let him start side by side at the other end of the field. And I'm going to have them start when I drop my hat. In other words, they're not starting on their own. We're judging reaction time, and then they run. And he said, I'll guarantee you my 4.6 guy is going to beat your 4.4 guy, because he's starting and reacting and doing more football-oriented skills. And I've always been a believer of that. I think the 40-yard dash gives us comparisons. That's what it gives us. Yeah. But I think we can take it too far.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, what is the value of it? And is there a prospect where it really did make a big difference for you? And when would that be? I like the comparison part of it. That for sure, there's something of value there if you have everybody on it.
Yeah.
But where is the value of it? Is there a guy you'd really want to have it for?
Yeah, I think it's it can go both ways using and depending on those numbers. I think a lot of the analytics people want to use those numbers more so than I think we should. I'll give you one example. Keenan Allen, Chargers receiver. I don't think anybody would dispute, really good player, right? Been around now for 8 or 10 years. He came out of Cal, and I remember I was at his workout, and I had given him a first-round grade on film and during my school visit. But he was injured, and he was struggling to get healthy all spring. So I remember going to a pro day that we said, you can't run, you're not ready yet. And he ran, and he ran 4.7. Okay. And the thinking was, if we don't have a 40 time on this kid, we're not going to draft him. Well, I think that's stupid, right? I mean, we're going to not draft this kid because he ran a 40 time, or he ran one that he wasn't healthy in. Just watch the film. You can see this kid can run, and you can see his ability to separate from tight coverage. Yeah. We don't need to see a three-cone drill to do that. I just think we've kind of we fell down the rabbit hole of finding more numbers to compute and put on a spreadsheet, and gotten away from the facts that this guy can separate. His body control and his lean allows him to create, you know, create space in tight coverages. I thought Keenan Allen was awesome at all that stuff. But if you go to his workout, you wouldn't have drafted him. I think he fell to the third round for us at the Chargers because of that, because all the numbers didn't compute. And there's a lot of numbers guys running teams in this league now. And I think you've got to have a happy medium between numbers and what you see on tape. I'm not one of those old school guys that, you know, thinks you just go on the tape alone. There's a place for numbers. You've just got to use your common sense of how to use them.
So during that draft, when Keenan was going from your first round and he was there in the third, were you starting to yell? I mean, what was going on? Or did you feel like, no, you guys had it figured out?
We didn't have it figured out, but when his name was there in the third round, I do remember this. Tom Telesco called me up to the front of the board, and we really didn't have a lot of communication or a lot of talk on draft day, but there were two other names he was considering drafting, and I just kind of shook my head. I said, Tom, we got a first-round grade on this guy. This is crazy. I mean, this falls into our lap, and he ended up, to his credit, picking him, and I think he's been one of their best players for the last 8 or 9 years.
It's time for Ask the GM.
Let's hit into our Ask the GM segment this week. And this is kind of heck, we could do a whole podcast on the idea of a developmental quarterback, when to take him, how to bring him along. I mean, it's always a mystery. Sometimes some of these guys hit late in the later rounds, and most of them you never hear from again. They don't even get a chance. So this year we've gone over who's at the top of the draft, and are there a couple guys here that you have in your mind that could maybe be worth a look as later picks at the quarterback position? And then I guess, what's the developmental plan for those guys?
I think you're right. I think there are in every year. I remember back to my Saints days when we drafted Mark Bulger in the sixth round. So I always wanted to have a guy or two in my back pocket that we could go to late, that we could keep as a practice squad guy. I think you've got to have somebody in the hopper, so to speak, learning, trying to do some things to get better. And I do see a couple of those guys this year. And I'm not going to go with the Kyle Trask and the Mills Davis and all those guys that everybody talks about. I'm going to dip down a little deeper in some guys that I like, both from a character standpoint and from a physical skill standpoint. And that's the Texas kid, Sam Ehlinger.
Okay.
Been a good player for them for a long time. I thought ran a system that was a little bit holding him back, didn't have a lot of great weapons around him. I think I can explain some of the deficiencies that might lend you to believe he doesn't have good numbers, but this kid's a really sharp kid. He's a great kid, a hardworking kid, has carried a franchise, has been the guy. And there's no bigger job than being a quarterback of University of Texas, right? I mean, that's giant. He's handled it all. He actually went to the same high school as Drew Brees. And I see this guy as being able to make the throws. He's really efficient in the pocket in that he can not only run for first downs, he's a really good athlete, but he can move within the pocket too and has some pocket moxie. I'm surprised that more people aren't talking about this kid. I saw enough in the film that I saw where I'd say, geez, this guy'd be a great later round pick, maybe even a mid round pick, and a great guy for a guy like Sean Payton to work with. He's kind of a cross between Drew Brees and Taysom Hill to me. Now, he's obviously not those guys. Don't confuse with what I'm saying here.
But
he has some of the same skill sets.
Stylistically.
Stylistically. If you could get this guy in your system for a year or two to learn what's going on, I'd love to have him. Then there's a kid at Mississippi State, KJ Costello, who I had been following from his days at Stanford. He was the starting quarterback at Stanford before the kid that's there now. And he ended up getting hurt, and so he never got his job back, and he left. And he went to Mississippi State with Mike Leach. Now, you can say what you want about Mike Leach. He's never been really a developer of quarterbacks, right? He had Gardner Minshew kind of fall in his lap at Washington State on a one-year grad transfer deal. He's never really developed them. And so he hasn't been great for him. But his system is good in that he puts up big numbers and gets them on your radar. And I think this Costello kid was challenged this year with not many weapons at Mississippi State, a new system, a new program. I know he's a smart kid, and I saw a kid that gets the ball out. He makes throws on time. I just felt like that system may, again, be holding him back a little bit. I think he'll be a better pro than he's been in college. But when I studied him at Stanford, I happened to, for some reason, one summer a couple years ago, looked at some Stanford film on the returning Pac-12 quarterbacks. And he was one of the guys I was highest on. I thought he was outstanding. And so he goes to Mississippi State, mixed results, but he's another guy I kind of have on the back of my back burner as a possible Mark Bulger type of guy. Both these guys I would consider later on. And if that answers the question, they would be guys that I would definitely have gathered all the intel and information on for sure.
Yeah. And when you bring those guys in, is it hard to get them to advance, right? I mean, the players are talking about not even coming in for the offseason stuff. And then, you know, there's going to be fewer preseason games now. And we've already pinched down the amount of reps for those guys because we're just getting reps for the starters. How does Sam Ehlinger even get a chance?
Yeah, he may not get a chance this year. Mark Bulger couldn't even get a snap in practice when I was with the Saints, because we had actually four NFL starting quarterbacks on our roster, but he couldn't even get a snap. So you just got to figure that's part of the process right now. You bring him in, eventually he'll get to make some throws in practice. Eventually you'll get him in the fourth quarter of a preseason game. Maybe it's not this year. Maybe it's the next year, but that's okay. He's further along anyway. So when we played John Kitten in Seattle years ago, we said, we don't care if John ever throws it down a ball. He's coming on a redshirt year and he's going to run the practice team stuff. He's going to run the scout team stuff and we'll just sit on him for a year. And I'm not sure that's a bad thing for the development of quarterbacks.
Yeah, no, that worked out well. He ended up having a nice career, better than a lot of people would have ever expected, because he was brought along with some coaches who knew what they were doing. And and had a good run. Well, we've had a good run here, Randy. I think we've gone overtime. This is probably our longest podcast, but it went fast. I mean, there's just so much to get to. Really appreciate your work and diligence and the insights you're bringing on a lot of these players. And we'll keep a lot of these guys in mind. And we'll be back again before the draft. So who knows? Maybe there'll be some more fun stuff.